योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचां मलं शरीरस्य च वैद्यकेन योपाकरोत् तं प्रब्रह्मणीनां पतञ्जलिं प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि। स्तुत्वे पतञ्जलिं व्यासं शङ्करं च मुनित्रयं कर्तृसूत्रस्य भाष्यस्य क्रमात् विवरणस्य च। सो वि विल् कण्टिन्यू द डिस्कशन् ऑन द फाइव वृत्तिस् vibrations or tendencies as we are called, pramana, viparyaya, vikalpa, nidra, smritayeha. These are the five vrittis that are explained in the sixth sutra. So now perhaps before we proceed to the next vritti, that is the fourth one, nidra, sleep, perhaps it may be appropriate to give some idea of the fundamental difference between the approaches in Western psychology and Indian psychology with special reference to Patanjali Yoga Sutra. Now, one point we have to remember is the concept of samskara is a special contribution of Patanjali system to world psychology. The concept of samskaras. Now, what is samskara? Samskara is the residual element. I shall give an example. We do something, that action and the corresponding experience, visual, audio, sensory, any kind of experience will create an immediate consequence, result. And then after that result has vanished, something is retained in our chittam or mind stuff, a tendency related to that experience. It could be negative or positive, favorable or unfavorable, related to happiness or unhappiness, and so on. That residual element is called samskara. In Western psychology, a clear distinction is not made between vrittis and samskaras. Tendencies are explained. Instincts, complexes, psychoid and archetypes are explained. Psychoid and archetypes, special contribution of Jung. But they all are related to what we call vrittis, vibrations. But what happens, what is retained in the mind stuff after that experience has vanished? We will always have a tendency to do something or not to do something, to feel or not to feel, related to our experience. That residual element is called samskara. A clear distinction between samskaras and vrittis is not clearly made in Western psychology. In Patanjali system, the samskara is very clearly explained and described, and the distinction between the vrittis and samskaras is clearly made. The samskaras actually constitute our personality, body, mind, intellect, the psychophysical mechanism, the way life or Atman expresses itself in our personality is decided by samskaras. What we are, how we react to the external world, how we respond to the stimuli coming from external objects, depends upon our samskaras. Of course, objective world will have its result, its impact, influence on our personality. But the way the objective world exerts its influence in our personality depends upon our own personality, which is nothing but the totality of all the samskaras that we have accumulated in the mind stuff, and the totality of all samskaras are the residual, the subtle elements of all actions that we may have performed, not only in this life, in the previous life. To give an example, the way we respond to people around, the way we interact to the empirical world around, is very much dependent upon our samskaras. That's why one great commentator on Patanjali's system makes a passing remark, Vijnana Bhikshu. If I translate that Sanskrit statement into English, it will be something like this. The Bible says, God creates man in his own image. But man creates God in his own image. That may be much more correct, because our understanding, our concept of God, our concept of the external world, our concept of our own life is very much dependent upon our character, which again a totality of our samskaras. Now, another point to remember is, in Western psychology, these tendencies or vrittis, what you call instincts or complexes or psychoids or archetypes, psychological archetypes, according to Jung, they all are pertaining to life in this world. What about certain characteristics, certain behavior patterns that we display, which we cannot explain in terms of our experiences in this world? So Patanjali and Vedanta takes us further down beyond the span of this life. There you understand the utter, the crass stupidity of Freud, if you don't mind using a strong language. Because Freud tried to explain repression in terms of repression of an adult, in terms of the experiences related to childhood. Of course, his range was very limited, so I don't want to go into those limits. Adler and Jung themselves, his own disciples, broke out from him. But in Patanjali system, repression can be carried beyond the range of our experiences in this life. There is an important dialogue in the Bhagavad Gita, though it is more related to Vedanta as a philosophical system, still this particular episode in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita has a direct bearing on Patanjali's system, especially with regard to the formation of samskaras. In the sixth chapter, Arjuna, the disciple, the student, puts one question to Krishna. The question is very simple. What happens to those who try to practice meditation, reading holy books, or yoga, whatever it may be, some kind of prayer, those who go to church or temple or synagogue every day, but then they have a deviation. Sometimes they stop practicing spiritual sadhanas, doing spiritual practices. Either they have a deviation or they die before they make much progress. So Arjuna asks one question, what happens to those people? If you have only one life, well, if you have a deviation, that's the end of everything. The sloka is this, ayadi sraddhayo pedo yoga chalida manasaha aprapya yoga samsiddhim kamgatim Krishna Gacchati? This is a question. What is the fate, what is the destiny of those who do not fully succeed in controlling their senses, but who have made sincere effort to practice meditation, prayer, reading holy books, some kind of spiritual practices, listening to useful, spiritually helpful lectures, but then either they couldn't make much progress or they have a deviation. Is everything lost? That's, I mean, if life ends with death, if death is a full stop, then even the slightest deviation will mean going to hell. If death is only a semicolon, not a full stop, not the end of the road, then we can still hope for coming back and continuing our spiritual effort in this life. So in answer to this question from Arjuna, Lord Krishna's answer is this: Nahi kalyana krit kaschit durgadim tada gechadi. Partha naiveha namutra vinasastasya vidyade. Nahi kalyana krit kaschit durgadim tada gechadi. This is the answer. The translation is very simple. Look here, Lord Krishna, addressing his disciple, answers, gives an answer to this question. Whatever little you do in this life, you meditate just for half an hour, 10 minutes, 1 minute a day. In your whole life, you are going to the church or a temple only once or twice, if you have done sincerely. You have read holy scriptures only once or twice. Or you have registered some good thoughts and ideas in your mind by reading some holy books. Maybe not many times, just a few times. That is enough. It doesn't mean that is the end of the goal. That's the goal. The point is, that little spiritual practice will not go waste. It will never be lost. That will have its impact on your mind stuff. It will become a samskara. It will become a natural tendency to continue the same practice of meditation or prayer. If we feel like going to some place where we can talk about God, we can meditate, if you have a natural inkling, a liking for that, it means we have done it in the past, if not in this life, in the previous life. Otherwise, we won't feel like, we cannot even withstand intellectually the onslaught of a spiritual lecture. We'll feel like running away from it. And we may find relief in some nightclub or somewhere. So, even to be able to withstand the torture of a spiritual talk, however inspiring it may be, we must have done some spiritual practice in the past. So, Lord Krishna says, Nahi kalyana krit kaschit durgadim tada gacchati. If you do a little noble work, that person will never perish. Whatever little we practice will become a samskara. Samskara becomes a habit and a character that will be transmitted to the next life. So we may not be born in a set of circumstances where we will be trained in prayer and meditation right from childhood. May not happen. But at one stage or other, when we go to university, library, or when we just visit a bookstore, if we find a very wonderful book, if you see the title, we feel like, oh, this is a wonderful book, I should read it. Depending upon the strength, the intensity of samskaras that we have accumulated, we may start reading that book the same day. If the samskara is weak, we may go on post-procrastinating. That also could happen. So the point is, we are never late, and nothing is lost. But it doesn't advocate complacency or procrastination or postponement. What it means is nothing will be lost because of this particular doctrine in Indian psychology. It's called the doctrine of samskaras, which is not found in Western psychology. That's why, you know, a person trained in Indian psychology can trace some problems of adulthood not just to childhood days, as in Freudian system, but going beyond that, a good psychologist trained in Patanjali system can pinpoint some of the problems coming from the previous life experiences and can counteract. And Patanjali himself gives a very, very scientific and psychological remedy for this problem. Whatever negative tendencies and vrittis and samskaras we have got can be counteracted, can be negated by positive samskaras, by positive actions. If the negative samskaras are the result of negative actions, negative vrittis, negative vibrations, then positive samskaras can be generated and created by consciously doing good actions, positive actions. Therefore, law of karma doesn't mean either predetermination or fatalism. Law of karma is a very scientific law. It's a great promise. If we have some problems today because of what we did yesterday, then we can certainly remedy those problems by doing good actions today. Every negative samskaras can be counteracted. So Patanjali says, Abhyasa Vairagya Abhyam Tannirothaka. All negative, later we are going to those sutras in the coming classes. All negative samskaras, negative vrittis can be counteracted, and we can create positive samskaras, positive vrittis and positive habits by deliberately and consciously trying to do good actions. Every good action creates a good samskara, positive vrittis, helpful vrittis, which will weaken the negative vrittis and accumulate a positive spiritual capital. So that point should be kept in mind when we go through these books, because those who are trained in Western psychology will be puzzled with regard to the concept of samskaras. It is a very, very important contribution of Patanjali's system. So in Western psychology, they have made rapid progress with regard to certain other areas like emotions, conflicts, and so on. They are mentioned in the Patanjali system, but Patanjali doesn't go into those details. So Patanjali or his commentators like Vyasa, Bhojya, Vijnana, Bhikshu, or Shankaracharya, they don't go. But at the same time, Patanjali system goes very deep with regard to one important mystery. Why are we what we are today? Why do we act? Why do we behave in a given manner? Why don't we behave in a different manner? If our present behavior patterns are wrong, how can we change? How can we bring about a total change in our own personality? So that is with regard to the concept of vrittis and samskaras in Indian psychology. So we have already dealt with three of the vrittis, that is pramana, viparyaya, and vikalpa. We are dealt with. The fourth vritti is nidra. Nidra means sleep. That comes in the 10th sutra, abhava pratyalambana vrittihi. Nidra. Nidra means sleep. It is defined abhava pratyalambana. Abhava pratyaya means, the explanation is this. In deep sleep experience, we normally do not experience anything when we are deep asleep. This is an important point. When we are actually in a state of complete dreamless deep sleep state, we do not experience anything in sleep. But even in that state, a vritti is present, which may not be acceptable to modern psychologists, maybe. Because the reason is this, when we come out of nidra or deep sleep, when we wake up, suddenly we feel that we had a wonderful experience in the form of deep sleep. A feeling of complete restfulness, a feeling of complete relaxation we experience when we come out of the deep sleep state. Now, a mental vritti, the mental vibration, this mental tendency, which objectifies the absence of awareness, is nidra. A requisite explanation. A mental vritti that objectifies the absence of awareness. Because in Indian psychology and philosophy, even the awareness of non-perception is itself is a vritti, it is a kind of perception. When you say, well, I don't know that, that is a kind of awareness. I am not aware of that, if you say. That absence of, you are aware of the absence of awareness. So, in see, it's not enough that you should know something. You should also know what you know. Otherwise, our knowledge is practically useless. Suppose we don't know what we know, then what's the use of our knowing? I should first of all know what I know. So awareness of knowledge is an important condition for vritti. Patanjali says nidra or sleep is a vritti because in sleep, when we were asleep, we are not aware that we are not experiencing anything. But when we come out of it, we become aware that we had a wonderful rest or experience. This idea can be further explained with the help of an important doctrine from Vedanta. It is another school of philosophy. Here I must tell you, according to Vedanta of Shankaracharya, non-dualistic system of Shankaracharya, yoga philosophy is very relevant. Yoga philosophy takes us to a penultimate stage, to a state of fitness for understanding the truth of non-duality. So it qualifies, it takes us to a very high state of awareness. See, if our mind stuff is completely devoid of all the diverse vrittis, then we become fully fit for understanding the absolute truth. So, I shall give this example from Vedanta. It's called Avasthatraya. Prakriya means the method of analyzing the absolute truth on the basis of our three experiences in dream state, in waking state, and deep sleep state, according to Vedanta philosophy. And this is agreeable to the higher philosophers of yoga also. In waking state, we experience visual, audio, sensory, all the different experiences related to the five senses of perception with the help of mind and the senses of perception. When mind and eyes come together, we become aware of a visual object. When mind and ears come together, we become aware of an audio object, and so on. When mind and sense of touch come together, we become aware of certain objects by touching, like that. In dream state, we also experience all this, but the senses of perception or senses of action are not involved in dream state. Only mind is involved, engaged in dream state. All experiences in dream state are projections of mind. Even walking in dream state is only mental walking. Physically, we are not involved. We may sleep in a dark room, eyes are closed, a small room. We sometimes dream of seeing an elephant or a big truck which can never enter the small room. So there is always the total impossibility of the objects manifesting in front of you. So everything is taking place at the mental level. In dreamless sleep state or deep sleep state, we are in a state of total unawareness, total absence of awareness. But at the same time, when we come out of this deep sleep, we become aware of having experienced or having had a complete rest or relaxation, which is possible only in deep sleep. So this awareness of having rested well would not occur unless one single subject had existed in dream, in waking, and also deep sleep stage. The same subject is the seer, the experiencer, the witness, continues to exist in waking state, in dream state, also in deep sleep states. The visual objects, the objects, the seen objects change, because in dream we experience one way, in waking state in another way, and in deep sleep nothing. But at the same time, this change, this diversity is only with regard to the seen objects. The seer, the witness, the subject remains the same. The reason why I took this example is this. In the Patanjali system, Nidra is also a vritti, because Nidra, in Nidra state, in complete deep sleep state, there is an objectification. What is the object? The object is the absence of awareness or lack of awareness at that state. Therefore, Patanjali says that is also a vritti. In fact, deep sleep also can leave its samskara in our mind. Dream objects also can leave the samskaras in our mind. Waking state experiences also can leave the samskaras in our mind. So whatever we consciously experience will always produce a residual effect. The residual effect is called samskaras. And the tendencies, habits, and characteristics that are built upon these experiences together constitute our personality. So it can be perception, a pramana, the first one, when we see directly, direct perception, inference, we read some books, verbal testimony, comparison, all these can be sources of these vrittis, experiences. Then false perception also will create a vritti. It is false, but it will have its impact on the mind stuff. Vikalpa, just non-objective, just words which don't correspond to any visual objects can also create tendencies. And again, deep sleep also can produce its residual element called samskaras. And the fifth one, the fifth vritti is called smriti. Smriti is memory. Anubhuta visaya asampramoshaka smriti. This is the fifth category of vrittis. Certain things that we have experienced, either by reading, through inference, direct visual experience, maybe false cognition, maybe rehearing some words which do not correspond to any external objects, all these we may remember again later. All these smritis, all these experiences come back to the mind even after that experience has vanished. In fact, there is a, in this context, there is a lesson to be learned by comparing this concept to Western psychology. In Freudian repression, the range of comparison or analysis is limited to life, the present life. But in Patanjali's system, the range of human tendencies, impressions, vritti, samskaras go beyond the present life. It encompasses our whole personality, whole existence. Some samskaras and tendencies that we may have accumulated, say, 100 lives earlier, maybe 500, 600 years earlier, maybe in the 12th or 13th century AD, it can come back to us. So then why do they remain suppressed? Why do they remain unmanifested? So Patanjali's system gives an answer. One samskara is subjugated by another samskara. See, that's why, suppose we feel a great attraction to spiritual practices. When we read a book, when we listen to lecture, or when we visit some holy places, we sometimes feel well. Or sometimes when we go to cremation ground or we go to this cremation office, you know, those who when you're nearest and dearest relations die, you go to cremation place, you come back. I know we also sometimes, some people become philosophers, at least for some time. Everything, all the money, wealth, and everything will come to an end one day. This idea, even the crudest materialists cannot escape this feeling. So we feel that way. Or when we read a book, a great book, when we go to a holy place, when we have a casual conversation with some spiritual persons, so then sometimes we feel this way. When Swami Vivekananda gave his lecture in Chicago in 1893, the whole lecture, Chicago, the first address will be around 6 minutes or maybe less. Very short speech. But it had a stirring impact on the audience. For some time, for a split second, they felt, here is this man uttering some great universal spiritual truths. They felt that way. That's why they felt so inspired. But that inspiration didn't last long. But after several years after this event, some of those who listened to Swami Vivekananda in Chicago, Parliament of Religions, were living in Seattle, in some other places of America. And when some of our Swamis went there to start centers, those, they have become very old, some of them who had listened to Swami Vivekananda years back, suddenly got a new inspiration, helped his pioneering Swamis. Or when we go to a library also, when we read a book, we feel. What happens? The positive spiritual tendencies suddenly come to the forefront. But if we leave it there, if we don't proceed further, if we don't continue the effort, persevere, then what happens? The other tendencies again will subject to the spiritual tendencies. So that is why Patanjali goes on repeating again and again, of course Patanjali means his commentators, that we must constantly continue enriching our mind stuff with positive good tendencies and impressions by being engaged, always engaged in some kind of noble deeds and actions or words. Not only actions, words can create a vrittis and it can become samskaras. Again, it can determine our future actions. So actions, words that we hear, visual objects that we see, things that we touch, sudden thoughts that flash in our mind, all these can create the corresponding vrittis, and vrittis after some time they vanish, but then the tendency, samskaras, are retained, which is called residual factor. It was this aspect Western psychology completely missed in the course of its analysis and research. And these samskaras determine our personality and character, and they determine the way we interact with the external world. So, according to Patanjali's system, subjugation of one samskara by another samskara is the real cause of repression. So, it's a very healthy analysis. If we have one wrong tendency, that tendency can always be neutralized and can be turned into positive good tendency by doing good actions. And that is again related to two important doctrines, the doctrine of love karma and the doctrine of rebirth, because both are accepted in Vedanta and also in yoga system of philosophy, Patanjali system. That's why towards the end of the sixth chapter of Gita, which I referred to earlier, Lord Krishna gives a very fine analysis. Tatradam buddhisam yogam labhade pauradekhikam yadateja tadobhuya samsiddhu kurunantana. This is the meaning. I shall explain this Sanskrit verse. Lord Krishna says, well, suppose you have done a lot of good things in this life. You have meditated for some time. You have prayed for some time. You have read some good books, listened to some good ideas, or may have sat in our room and contemplated, and some good noble ideas flashed in our mind. All right. And then when we die, what happens? These tendencies caused by these good noble actions will create a spiritual capital. And that will be credited to our account. So when you are reborn, when you are born again, what happens? We can start from where we stopped in this life. So Lord Krishna says, Tatradam buddhisam yogam labhade pauradekhikam. The word meaning should be understood, very relevant. In the next life, our mind comes in contact, that is buddhisam yogam, comes in contact with those good tendencies that are accumulated in our system. Good tendencies accumulated in previous life. One may ask the question, we have seen good things with our eyes in this life. When we die, these eyes will be lost. Or we may do good things with our hands, with our intellect. These things will vanish when we die. So how do they benefit us in the next life? These physical actions, intellectual actions, mental actions themselves will vanish, but the subtle residual aspects called samskaras will remain, because samskaras come out of vrittis and vrittis come out of actions. Actions do not necessarily mean physical action. Thought is a mental action. Speech is also a mental oral action. A casual thinking is also an action, physical action. So any of these actions will become vrittis, and vrittis will become samskaras, and samskaras will remain in the bank account of our life. So next life, what happens? That's why tatratam buddhisam yogam labhade pauradekhikam. These good tendencies and impressions that we accumulated with this body in previous life, with our body means, they remain there intact. And then yatateja tadobhuya samsiddhu kurunantana. And then what happens? In the next life, when we are walking in the street, suddenly we look at the billboard, there's a temple or a church or a meditation, let us go and step in there. That tendency comes because we have done it earlier. Every action is a repetition in Vedanta and yoga. If a child shows a great natural faculty to do painting, for example, for music, it shows that child in his previous life had done plenty of painting and singing. Otherwise, that's why every action is a repetition. Every genius has a background behind him or her. He's done and perfected that art. So he suddenly manifests in young age. But when we look at the whole thing from the angle of this life, we feel it's a prodigy. There is no prodigy as such. It's actually going on accumulating and enriching and growing and evolving. And then Lord Krishna, in this same chapter, means he avasya means we'll be helpless. We cannot but act in according to the tendencies that we have accumulated in previous life. That's why we are forced. We feel as if we have to behave in a particular manner. That's why in criminology, there's a book in criminology, it said, there are some criminals in the prisons, you know, they feel so restless. They feel all right if they could do some petty crimes to feel mentally relaxed. So they do that, it is kind of in their prison, knowing that they get a chance to do some petty thieving. So they feel perfectly relaxed. Because the accumulated tendencies will force them to behave in a manner. Otherwise, they can't do that. So the best way is to counteract these undesirable tendencies by constantly, consciously engaging in good action so that good tendencies, spiritually healthy tendencies, will be generated and they will generate healthy samskaras, and healthy samskaras will constitute healthy characteristics. So here in the 11th Sutra, Patanjali says, Smriti, Smriti is a memory. Memory and dream are more or less interrelated. Memory is nothing but the present, but the projection of a previous experience after that experience has vanished from our mental horizon. That is the meaning of memory. Memory is again related to the mutual conflicts and proximity, juxtaposition of conflicting samskaras and vrittis. So memory also is intimately related to samskaras and character. We remember only those things which we naturally like or dislike. We only remember, if you analyze yourself, fine. What we remember most are either the best things that we like or the worst things that we dislike. The worst things we try to avoid remembering, so they come back to the mind. The best things we want to remember, so they come to the mind. Raga and Dvesha, two pendulums, two extremes of the pendulum. One extreme, another extreme. Aversion and attachment. So memories also constitute one important category of vrittis according to Patanjali. In the net 12th Sutra, Patanjali makes a general statement. They will conclude for today. Abhyasa niro abhyasa vairagya abhyam tat nirothaha. How to counteract these vrittis, tendencies and samskaras? Through the practice of constant repetitive actions of good and desirable, spiritually healthy tendencies and samskara should be generated. We must work in that direction. So we will conclude for today. Now we will have interaction for about 10 minutes. Well, the word energy, of course, we can be used in a general sense. The point is, Patanjali's system is linked to Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya system is the philosophical dimension of Patanjali's system. In Sankhya system, we should know a little about Sankhya philosophy to fully understand. I shall explain in the next classes. Sankhya system is a dualistic pluralism, which means it believes in two fundamental eternal categories. One is Purusha, the other is Prakriti. Purusha is conscious, but inactive. In fact, Vedantins like Shankaracharya have discovered some fundamental flaws in the conclusions of Sankhya philosophy. So in Shankaracharya's commentaries, there are long chapters. Remember, it has nothing to do with Patanjali system. The conclusions of Sankhya philosophy are a bit erratic according to Vedantic perspective. But at the same time, Vedantins fully accept the details. All that we are explaining here are fully accepted by all systems, theistic, orthodox systems of Indian philosophy. The conclusions of Sankhya system are not acceptable. Details, the analytical details are fully acceptable. So I shall come back to the Sankhya system. Sankhya system believes there are two fundamental eternal categories. One is Purusha, which is conscious, which has got what is called Chaitanyavan, means conscious, at the same time inactive. The other one is Prakriti, which has no consciousness, but active. So in fact, Advaitins, from a philosophical point of view, find this position totally erratic. Because how can an unconscious thing be the source of all the evolutes that come out of it? So Prakriti is jada, which means unconscious, but is active. So from Prakriti comes Mahat, Buddhi, then the five tanmatras, subtle element, then five panchamahabhutas, gross elements, the mind, and also the ego system. All these are quite fundamental in Sankhya system and so in the Patanjali system. So the only problem in Sankhya system is how can an unconscious category be the mother of the whole world? The entire universe is an evolute of Prakriti, which is by its very nature jada, means unconscious. So Prakriti does all this for Purusha, and we always identify ourselves to be distinct and different from Purusha. Once we understand that this is not correct, we realize liberation. The only point is, in Sankhya philosophy, is it is an absolute dualism. We will explain the Sankhya system in the coming sutras, because there are some areas where you have to keep in mind some of the philosophical doctrines of Sankhya system. So, what's the question you asked? Yes, yes, again, yes, coming back. The whole universe, everything is an evolute of Prakriti. 23 evolutes coming from Prakriti, including 24, Purusha 25. So the whole universe, physical universe, and the subtle elements, our intellect, our mind, senses, and the entire cosmic entities called Mahat, all these come from, they are evolved from Prakriti. So, and all these will ultimately go back to Prakriti. That the idea of involution came from Sankhya system for the first time. The idea of involution in philosophy was used very elaborately by Swami Vivekananda, mostly by interpreting Sankhya system. So that is the Patanjali system. Everything comes from the universe, from the Prakriti system. And Prakriti is the source of the whole creation. And Purusha is a distinct entity. They are totally distinct entities. So those who have listened to lectures on Vedanta, Dvaita Vedanta, may feel that the Sankhya system is a bit primitive with regard to its conclusions. But the detailed analysis of
human characteristics in Patanjali's yoga system is extremely scientific, rational, and psychologically very much acceptable. This idea behind. Yeah.
Then, what about Prarabdha
karma?
Where does that fall?
Oh, yes, I will explain that. The question is, if we have got undesirable samskaras and tendencies, behavior patterns, etc., they can be countered by practicing, consciously practicing their opposite. So that's one way to get rid of undesirable tendencies and samskaras. Now, what about prarabdha karma? Now, here I should explain. There are three categories of karmas in Vedanta and also yoga, acceptable to all the six orthodox systems of philosophy. One is sanchita karma, accumulated karmas, karmas that remain with us all the time, which have not yet started fruition. And agamika karmas are or karma phalas, results of karmas, are related to what we may or we are going to do in future. Our present condition, this body, what we experience, good and bad experiences, happiness and unhappiness, pleasures and grief, all these problems, our whole empirical realities of life, are caused by the prarabdha karmas. Prarabdha itself means prakashena arabdha, which means certain karmas which have started fruition, which have started manifesting their results. Now, how do we, or is it possible for us to counteract these prarabdha karmas? Prarabdha karmas intensity can be reduced. To that extent, they can be countered. There are many examples given here. See, prarabdha karmas are compared to an arrow that has left the bow. We have done many things in the past. So this body, these experiences, these good and bad experiences, these problems, all these we are experiencing, caused by certain actions and the residual results and samskaras related to either activities in this life or previous life. We cannot completely get rid of prarabdha karmas and their results. But the intensity of the consequences can be reduced. Suppose people who are facing a lot of problems. You find certain people, that's why many people turn to religion because of that. They go on doing good things, good actions. They never steal, they never tell lies. Nobody has any complaint about them, but they suffer. So sometimes people feel this is something totally inexplicable, a kind of paradox. There are many such people. They always do good deeds. They pray, they read good things, they never do any harm to anybody, but they have to face a lot of inexplicable problems. Now, logically, we can explain this as the result of some actions that we may have done in the past. So now, the intensity of these negative consequences can be reduced by prayer or by spiritual practices. Prayer, meditation, unselfish activities for the good of others. Then if you are destined to be bitten by a cobra, we may be bitten by maybe a water snake. Or if you are destined to be bitten by a water snake, maybe an ant. So that is the explanation given by Vedantic philosophers. Again, you have to take that simile of the arrow that has left the bow. Prarabdha karmas, the arrow which has left the bow. The bowman has released the arrow, so it has to hit the target. But then suppose a strong wind blows, the arrow may not reach the target. Its flight, it can be modified. It may hit some minor things, it may fall down there. It may not complete its velocity. Its velocity will be blocked by some objects, turning of the wind, strong wind may suddenly. So if one practices spiritual sadhana, spiritual sadhana you have to take in a very broad sense. Any unselfish act to help others, any noble thought, any kind of service or prayer, all these can reduce the intensity of negative consequences of undesirable actions. The example is again related to that bowman shooting the arrow. The arrow has left the bow. Now, under normal circumstances, if there is no wind blowing, it has to hit the target. But suppose a strong wind blows. Similarly, if you do some very good actions, it's like a wind blowing. Suddenly, the intensity will be reduced. The arrow will lose its velocity because it hits something else. So that is an important point with regard to prarabdha karmas. So Patanjali's system is very rational. You can always feel. Sometimes when we do some noble good actions, something good for others, if you feel a kind of inner relaxation, blissfulness, a soothing effect. We won't feel that when we do with a definite motive, with a selfish motive for money or status. We don't feel. Many people work day and night in the offices, you know. And when they come, they have to take medicine for getting sleep, which means they didn't like the work. But there are many wonderful people who go on working for others. Gandhi is a classic example. Gandhi slept only for 3-4 hours of the day. The old man was always busy and he never felt fatigued. So, when our mind tells us, well, you see, you have done a lot of hard work, we feel fatigued, tired. But anybody who does unselfish actions for the good of others, it's called karma yoga or spiritual practice, which produces a soothing effect. In fact, that is the criterion given in spiritual classics. When we pray or we meditate, when we do something good for others, if we have a relaxed, soothing effect, a cooling effect in our mind, then we are on the right track. If we get more and more tense, more and more confused as we go on praying, then that's not the right kind of prayer. So, Patanjali says, these actions can counteract the effects of undesirable actions and reduce the intensity of the consequences of undesirable actions in the past. That's it.
Yeah.
In fact, the suggestion that you should never think of the past or the future, you should always focus on the eternal present, it is given only as a relaxation technique. When people are terribly confused or suffering from anxiety, neurosis, and tension, sometimes this suggestion is very helpful. Don't worry about the past and present. Concentrate on the present and do good things. But philosophy helps us to take an overall view of the whole question of human life. And that's what Patanjali does. So, of course, Patanjali's system says that if you practice samyama, mean dharana, dhyana, samadhi, when we can completely empty the mind of all the vrittis, then we'll be able to see the rock bottom. Similarly, we'll be able to see the past. That's the doctrine. But that is only hypothesis. But it was really experienced by many who practice yoga. As for this suggestion that you made just now, it is very psychological and psychologically very sound, but this is mostly given as a soothing technique to get rid of anxiety, worry, tension for people who worry so much about the future results and so on. For them, focusing on the present and concentrating on the present and looking upon every bit of whatever we do or action as an offering to God, that is certainly helpful. But Patanjali is taking a complete overall view of the whole question of the philosophy of existence. What is our true nature? What is our personality? Why do we face these problems? Your suggestion just gives a little small medicine, you know, to forget some of these problems for the time being. But Patanjali asks, why do we have to confront these problems? Why do problems arise? What's the original source? So it goes much deeper in a psychologically and philosophically very, very, I mean, manner. That's the idea. Patanjali, meditation doesn't enable us to see our past. Please remember, meditation comes much later. We have just started Patanjali's system. Meditation, dhyana, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. That is, dhyana is the seventh of the Ashtanga Yoga, which we have not even taken up. Right now, Patanjali is discussing some of the mysteries of human behavior, human character, the way our mind functions, the nature of our emotions. All these are the topics for discussion. Meditation, we have not yet started the topic of meditation. It comes later. Meditation is the seventh stage in the Ashtanga Yoga, which comes much later. Meditation or dhyana, as understood in Patanjali's system, is an advanced state. Dharana, dhyana, samadhi. That is 6th, 7th and 8th, which are quite advanced states. Before that, yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, like that you have to go, like that. Right now, Patanjali, we have just started the discussion right now. This is the beginning of the class. Patanjali is discussing some of the mental tendencies, vibrations, how our actions produce certain tendencies and impressions, and how they finally constitute our character. So how we can, through the knowledge of this mechanism, how we can consciously try to enrich our mind stuff, chittam, with positive vrittis and tendencies by consciously doing good deeds, thinking good thoughts, like that. That's the idea behind it. So that subject, the question of this meditation comes much later. Thank you. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.